Welcome to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast, where since our first episode in 2020, we've thrown the spotlight on key stakeholders tapping into the future of liquid trade finance. Now, we took a short break, but we're back bigger and stronger. You'll notice I'm not Melody. My name is Doris Kononovich. And on this 13th edition, we'll be focusing on new ways to distribute trade finance. Now, to discuss this with me, I have a very special guest. I have the lead portfolio manager, Allianz Global Investors, Martin Opfermann. Martin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Doris.
Lovely. Now, I know I've just literally introduced you, but for anyone who's wondering, what does a lead portfolio manager at Allianz Global Investors do? Can you just give us a bit of an insight?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I head up the trade finance team here at Allianz Global Investors, and I co-portfolio manage the trade finance funds that we've launched here at the firm. My background's basically in credit and private markets. I've been with Allianz Group for 20 years, and the last five of which with Allianz Global Investors. I've always been on the buy side, always been sort of in credit and fixed income.
It's a good place to be. And can you introduce Allianz Global Investors as a group as well?
Yeah, we're Allianz Global Investors. We're 700 billion AUM fund manager, part of Allianz Group, the big insurance, global insurance company. Euler Hermes, now Allianz Trade, also belongs to Allianz Group. So we have sister companies. Yeah. And that's Allianz Global Investors, we're managing bonds, equities, multi-assets, but also alternatives and trade finance. Our team sits under private debt. So we see this as a private markets product.
That's great. Now, why is Allianz Global Investors active in trade finance currently?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a very old question because my partner and co-portfolio manager, David Newman, he's been musing about this question for the last, I believe, almost 8 to 10 years. He's been thinking, okay, how the asset class is attractive, how can we get into it? We didn't quite find the access. And then some 5-6 years ago, it changed, and there's a few trends that emerged and led us to think, well, now the time is getting right to enter. And that was sort of 5 years ago when I joined from Allianz to Allianz Global Investors. And the three trends we found looking at the market were the following. One, banks with Basel IV and more regulation coming the way, were hitting more and more limits, be it RWA efficiency, sort of making the RWAs work harder, be it absolute exposure limits, be it absolute leverage limits on the balance sheet, and so on. So quite a few restrictions that the banks were seeing, but also on the positive side, more and more banks willing to make their balance sheets work harder and to syndicate more. And obviously not just to other banks, but then who have the same problems, but to non-bank investors. That was a trend that was emerging that we saw 5 years ago. The other equally big trend was the fintech movement. Yeah, not having, for us, it was important to set up, if we were to play in this market, to set up a sourcing that is broad-based and always works in every market phase, in every situation. And seeing a second sort of group of actors, not just the banks for sourcing, but the fintechs, was important to us. And we saw that there was just so much going on the fintech side, new products, old products in an new IT environment, suddenly applying the old products to new situations that made us think, okay, there is now a new another way to source assets should the bank channel not work for whatever reason.
Yes, you talked about this as sort of trends and things that have changed. And we all know that trade finance is traditionally a space for banks and credit insurance. Now, what do you think caused this change? What caused this shift in the market to attract new liquidity providers such as yourselves?
Yeah, well, I think on the one hand side, there's this regulatory angle, the RWA efficiency, and so on, that drove banks. And on the other hand side, I think the corporates themselves, they wanted growth in this space. They wanted to grow their lines. They wanted to grow their exposures. And with just their regular setup of house banks, it just wouldn't work because the markets in SCF and RF were just growing so fast for a couple of years now, and so there needed to be sort of more pockets to take on this paper, and I think that's what made a lot of banks we talk to think, okay, there needs to be more distribution to non-bank investors, as I mentioned. There's also a sort of a natural gap as you build out these supply chain finance programs and you go down the fat tail, the long tail of suppliers, there's more KYC work to be done for smaller tickets, smaller volumes. And it's not always the non-IT setup that can handle those efficiently, those onboardings. And I think there's a whole range of companies that have become much more efficient in onboarding these type of suppliers through a proper KYC, AML sanctions checks, but more sort of the way they are onboarded is more IT driven and more standardized and just more efficient and at lower marginal costs probably than what the banks can achieve. And I think that is also a driver for this fintech development what we've seen. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about instruments. Trade financing comprises of various. What type of instruments are you wishing to fund?
Well, our ambition is any instrument from any partner. It should be possible on our platform. That's our ambition. And so far, the instrument types we liked, we've always been able to bring onto the platform. Our platform took us a year and a half to build the ops and the IT and the interfaces and everything, but it's rather flexible and can adapt to anything new that there may come. And that's the strength that we're playing on in our sourcing. We currently work with 18 different partners. We have loose conversations with probably another dozen of them. And should the right trade come along, that number will go up. Transaction. I'm not so much focused on the instrument name, whether it's letters of credit, supply chain finance, RF, trade loans, or any fintech specialized product. We do them all. We look at them all, and we would consider them and have considered them. The key that we always ask us is how complicated is the deal. And can we process it? And so far, we can do multi-currency deals, we can do daily or weekly batch runs, we can do the big, large single invoices that come every 3 months, or we can do the hundreds or even in some trades thousands of invoices. So the platform is pretty flexible. It's more are the economics right as far as is the risk reward okay? That's first hurdle to jump over, but then it's the operational complexity versus the pricing we're getting. Is that justified? Because obviously it ties up work, it ties up our back office team, and it also ties up us in the PM team up in doing credit work and the transaction analysis. So it needs to be sort of a bundle that makes sense. If something is more complicated, it also needs to warrant a bit more yield. And that's not always the case, not with every deal.
Right. If you're just joining us, this is the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast, where we have the lead portfolio manager, Allianz Global Investors, Martin Opferman. Now, Martin, we've just discussed some sort of instruments that you have your eyes on funding. Are you relying on credit insurance yourself?
In short, no. We don't structurally use credit insurance. If it comes along with a product or an instrument already offered to us by the sourcing partner, then we would consider it as part of the risk bundle. But we are not structurally insuring everything for this fund. Yeah. We're taking the risk outright.
Okay. And may I ask, where is your liquidity coming from?
Yeah, it's coming from institutional investors such as insurance companies, reinsurance companies, pension funds, also corporate treasuries, and also family offices we have. So it's a broad mix across 20-25 clients.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit now about AI. How are you scoring transactions, and what are you expecting from AI scoring providers?
Yeah, so to your first question, how we're scoring transactions, I would answer in a nutshell, very old school. So we conduct very traditional credit analysis. We work with our in-house team of around about 25 credit analysts worldwide that cover anything that is medium to large cap. So that's our first sort of access point. We also work with Euler Hermes, or now Allianz Trade, with their credit scoring, which is the in-house proprietary system. We also work with artificial intelligence, but not so much for sort of the credit assessment and the transaction analysis, but more when it comes to fraud checks and sort of background checks on intermediaries. That's where we work with the providers that also use artificial intelligence to conduct searches. Yeah, so that's one area. I know there is a few platforms and fintechs out there that use machine learning on their platform to deduct more credit information from the data they gather. That's, for me, is very, very interesting to look at and to also sort of learn about and take into consideration. But it would not drive our credit decision alone. It would sort of lead to a reject, but not to an accept of a transaction. Because one basic problem we find often is that these algorithms and this data learning has only gone through a one-way market. Yeah. So post global financial crisis, where the liquidity has always been directionally positive, and not sure that the machine has already captured a reversal of that trend, because pre global financial crisis, I'm not sure a lot of these platforms have the data from the old days. Yeah.
Now, we'll talk a little bit more about technology, because this is huge and incredibly eye-opening as to what is available now. But let's just go back a little bit on trade finance funds. What are you expecting from rating agencies currently?
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now. We like that the rating agencies, the ones we've spoken to, are looking into the space. There are some out there who are putting out requests for commentary, so they are amending their methodologies. They're bringing the methodologies they're using more close to what actually the assets are and the risks around these assets are. I mean, there are still a few that are just using their standard ABS rating methodologies, which in our view don't really fit for various reasons. There is what we would expect is that more are following and making sort of this trade finance specific methodologies. That's one way. A key component to that is the question, how do you take into consideration that oftentimes the invoice is to an operating entity without a credit rating, which belongs to a large group that has a credit rating. So how do you notch between, in a rating agency language, how do you notch between the parent company, holding company that's rated, and the subsidiary that's unrated? Now, how do you treat those subsidiaries? Now, the rating agencies often see it from a point of view that they're going to be arbitraged by some structured products, and we as investors, we see it as the bread and butter of trade finance, that we always deal just with opcos, and these are just normal counterparties, and there's absolutely nothing special about them. So those two worlds, they have to somehow merge and come to a consensus on how to treat them in a rating methodology properly, because without that, the ratings won't be fitting to this sector.
Now you've almost answered my next question through that. I was going to say, you know, Allianz GI is part of a huge capital markets, whereas, you know, trade finance refers to banking instruments, and I kind of wonder if you can shed even more light on the ways that these two worlds can be connected and can be bridged.
I think we're still in the phase of finding out. I mean, we've been there for a couple of years now, and there's not one clear concept that is absolutely dominant. How the asset trade finance, i.e. the invoice or the loan, the trade loan or whatever the instrument is delivered to the ultimate investor, meaning the pension fund, the insurance company, the family office. There's not one way of transforming that asset. And we are still sort of in a market phase of finding out how it can work. So there's one way that's been taken by some is to structure it into bonds, into notes. And essentially the vision is to make it more like an ABS market, different deals structured and sold directly to those investors and trade them like a bond in a bond fund or as an allocation within a bond fixed income mandate. That's obviously the easiest to trade for the investors. But the hardest to structure and to get rid of all these principal agent problems and all these structuring operational challenges. And it risks losing the ins and outs of a very technically difficult asset class. So that's, but it is easy. Yeah? So it is easy to invest, which is ultimately the goal of any market to function, right? The second way that people are trying out is basically just giving loans or financing to fintechs on their balance sheet and let the fintechs take the exposure, or the same for factoring companies. In the US, we see a lot of people financing factoring companies directly, taking outright risk, like just like a corporate bond or loan to a factoring company, which is obviously then leaving the problem of structuring and making this asset class work with the factoring and with the fintech. That's sort of a way we would say is a bit limited, because not all business goes to fintech and to factoring companies. So we don't really see, we see that as one way to do it, but not as the one that is really ultimately in the end bridging that gap. And then there's the third one, which is sort of also out there, and that's where sort of Allianz Global Investors is positioned. It's a fund, basically. Asset management industry mission is to invest the money of investors, of institutional investors, or one day even retail, into the instruments of trade finance. That obviously adds a layer of costs, adds a layer of complexity, but it is ultimately beneficiary, because the technicalities can be dealt with, the reporting requirements can be dealt with, the ins and outs of the asset class can be dealt with, the principal agent complexities can be dealt with, and so on. So there's a lot that speaks for this solution. But again, all three solutions are sort of at in the making, in development, in marketing, and we'll see in a few years which one's sort of gonna be the one that ultimately ultimately reaches the huge amount. Yeah.
So I'm going to raise on the point too you made with fintechs, and let's get into technology now. What do you think the role of technology is in this space, and are you actually looking to use any technologies to extend liquidity to trade financiers?
Yeah, so the simple answer is we would. If there's a deal, if there's an attractive deal that warrants the efforts, warrants the APIs to be built, or the connectivity to be set up, the reporting to be adjusted, and you know there's a bit of operational work to be done before each trade. If there's enough juice in the transaction, we would go the way. If there's not, we'll do other trades which are easier and faster to invest. So that's a simple answer.
Yeah,
we're really very agnostic. We're not running for technology for the sake of technology. We're not shy of it. Yeah, we're just.
It has to work for your purposes.
It has to work, and it has to be worth our time and effort. Yeah, there's limited resources inside of our company and inside of my team, so it has to work. That's the simple message.
And what unique challenges in your workflow today in the trade finance distribution space do you think the use of technology can solve? This is like a wish list. Like if it could really be the solution to make your life simpler, easier, you know, make processing and the workflow, you know, go smoothly, what would it be?
Ooh, yeah, solve it all for us. Yeah. Where should I start? I mean, position recon, record keeping for custodians, and in a fashion that is compliant with investor regulation, not just banking regulation or accounting rules, but general cash flow management. That question. Also around information gathering, and aggregating that. I mean, there's tons of things. Ultimately, I mean, although we are, I mean, KYC AML. How far can you outsource it? That's always the question. There's definitely needs. It's just have we figured it out yet as an industry to really rely on this? There's so many applications. To be honest, I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean, it took us a year and a half to figure our approach out, and our approach is very much customized to Allianz Global Investors, meaning what did we have before we started as operational setup, what was existing, and what was missing, and we built it around that. It's not really to be generalized. Yeah.
And I'm curious, how do you see the distribution space evolving, say, in the next 2 years?
Yeah, 2 years. So definitely more banks to sell. We're seeing it already now. More of the large players are all distributing already. But I think we're going to see more regional players also starting to syndicate. Players that have historically said, my balance sheet is big enough, my board tells me to buy and hold everything, and I should be growing more, who will ultimately also come to exposure limits, to size limits, to country limits, and who are beginning the conversations now, and we have a few of those ongoing. That's I think, a trend, so there will be more selling to non-banks. We also see the next stage in the evolution in the asset managers. I think that's given the three sort of competing in a way, future views of the industry. Yeah, whether it's notes, funds, or just plain loans, I think the next, if you ask 2 years, the next evolutionary stage will be the asset managers who will just increase in size as a next step, because the funds are out there, the players are out there, and I think the assets are also out there. So I think there's going to be some growth there, quite a bit. And I believe that specialist asset managers or specialist funds will be there before we then later see the regular bond fund investing in this space. I think.
Amazing. And finally, the TFD initiative thrives on insights of its members. So when we have an expert portfolio manager, obviously we have to explore some trends. In your opinion, what are the top three market trends for institutional investors currently active in trade finance?
Yeah, I would say, well, institutional investor meaning, to be clear, this means our clients, yeah, the ones that are investing with us, what's on their minds, what do we take away from conversations with them. I think the world's gotten ever more uncertain. If you name three, the first one would be inflation. How can I keep investing in 2022 without against a rising inflation? How can I achieve positive and stable returns? I think that's one of the drivers for them, and that's gotten very hard within the bond world, with duration eating your returns. So inflation number one. Second one is around geopolitics, and in a broader sense also the supply chain disruptions and input factor cost increases. So the whole real world changing around them. How can I position in that if I have so little visibility? And historically, you had more stability over the next 3 to 5 years, and people were much more willing to place their credit bets or their credit views in the bond and fixed income space. Whereas nowadays, they're picking up conversations with us and say, "Why can you invest for 90 days, and then we'll see, and then we'll maybe have to reposition." So that's the whole second point. What drives them? And the third one is also around that. It's the slowing economic momentum that we're seeing, the question where will that end? Are we going into a recession or just lower growth? That's driving quite a bit. And again, the question that they have on their mind: how can they position in that market phase with their portfolios? Our answer is very simple. Don't position for it. Invest with us 90 days. We'll sort it out in 3 months and then reposition.
Amazing. Incredible. Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today. It's been very enlightening conversation with you once again, Martin. Thank you so much for making time to be here.
Thanks for listening, Doris. Thanks.
If you enjoyed the episode, there's more where that came from. To listen to more of our previous podcasts, don't forget to subscribe to our channel on Spotify. That's the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast. And to our YouTube page to see our lovely faces and watch the videos. Till next time, I'm Doris Kononovich. Thank you so much for being here and have a lovely day.